Blog Talk Radio.
And that's a bet. All right. I'm feeling like a real man should, and we are ready to get this thing popping. Today on the Urban Therapy with Sun Show, we are talking about the first time you flunked a class, the first time you messed up with somebody. You know, the first time you flunked a class. Listen, now to an average student or to a student that didn't really care about their coursework or their schoolwork or never liked school or whatever the case may be, flunking a class might not have been a big thing because you probably got that over with early when you were in the lower grades. But for people who have done well in school their whole life, you know, doing well in school, doing well in a in your classes, doing well in your schoolwork was like the definition of your entire intelligence. Like that was your being. Like most people who have done well in school pride themselves on being able to catch on to smart things really fast. It's a badge of honor. It's actually a good thing. Everybody likes people who are smart. We might not like people who are smart behind, but we like people who are smart. And we admire them, even when we don't really like them personally. Maybe they don't have the type of personality that we gravitate towards, but we do appreciate the fact that we know that, listen, they be busting it out when it comes to that schoolwork. So if you need a paper to, if you need a test paper to cheat off of, or somebody to write your papers for you or something like that, you go to these types of people. And it could be a shock to these people when they finally get to a point in their class history, school history, where they are actually struggling, where they're not catching on as fast, where maybe there are some other things going on in their lives that are taking away from them being able to study or concentrate on their schoolwork the way that they used to. So it can almost feel like the end of an era. You know, how many kids do you know? How many friends have you had that used to bust it out, all A's and B's, honor roll all the time, always did well in their classes, always went to good schools, maybe were in the mentally gifted programs and all that kind of stuff, and only to go to college and start partying, drinking, getting high, having sex, enjoying their freedom, and next thing you know, they flunking out. It's their first time on probation. They probably never even seen a C or D in their lives. They seeing them now, and they might even be seeing an F. Is it the end of an era? Or do they need to drop out? Has it all started to crumble down for them? The thing is, like to somebody like to a forward-thinking person or a person that has been through this kind of thing and realized that you just have to pick yourself up by your bootstraps and get it back together, you figure, well, listen, once you get your scales balanced, once you stop letting other things take up all of your time and your concentration, you'll get back to the books and start doing well again because you have the aptitude to do it. But for the person that might have flunked that class for the first time, they might start tripping. They might start being like, oh, my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. My parents never saw an F on my report card. I don't know if I'm going to be able to go home for the holidays, for the summer or whatever. You know what I mean? That's my ass. Not only that, but they may start questioning whether they can compete with the big boys, because maybe, you know how some people have gone to the same school all the way from kindergarten all the way up to the 12th grade. That's the only school that they've known. You know, if you live in a small county, you know, or a small town where there's only one elementary school, one middle school or junior high and one high school, sometimes the school district is made so all of the students from first grade through 12th have some type of interaction with each other because they're in close quarters. So you may have been a big fish in the small pond of the school that you went to for all of those years and all of that time. But now you're in a big school, a big university, and, you know, you're dealing with students from all over the country, sometimes all over the world and things like that. And it can make you start second-guessing your intelligence, second guessing your attitude, second guessing whether you have what it really takes. You know, it's like when you play basketball, or football, or something like that. Let's take basketball. You might have been the best person. You might have been the man at the gyms that you were playing at because you were playing against the same people all the time. So you were shaking and baking them and crossing them over and you was just killing them on some hot dog shit. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, hot sauce shit. On some hot sauce shit, you know, with the and one players. You know what I mean? They was real good at dribbling and all of that, but they wasn't shit when they tried to go to the NBA because they couldn't stay healthy. Plus, a lot of the rules that were allowed in the and one league wasn't allowed in the NBA. Like them long crossovers, you know. But anyway, so you might start getting into a mindset where you are wondering if you still got it. Maybe you never had it. It can be a very, very eye-opening experience when you finally fail a class. You know what I mean? Some people never recover from this shit. It sounds ridiculous, right? Yeah. But I remember seeing it. Freshmen who I knew did well in high schools where they came from or whatever. They got in college and they started drinking, smoking, fucking, partying, going to other places, road tripping and all that kind of stuff. And at the end of the semester, they had like a 0.87, 0.6 something. You know, like, yo, you flunked almost every, you didn't just flunk a class, you flunked them all damn near. You got like a B, a C, and three Fs. It's not a good look. So it's not the end of the world. It's not the beginning of your downfall, but you can feel that way. The first time that you flunked a class, you know, where when it came to schoolwork, you used to hold your head high. If there's a math problem, I can do it. If it comes to reading, I'll get through it. I get all A's and B's. I don't see no C's. You see them C's, but I don't see no C's or D's. Never have, never will. My expectations that I'll be one of the best. And it's all right to be that way. But, you know, we all have something that we would like to be good at that we're not so good at. And I wouldn't get into that too. We all have something in our lives that we would love to be good at that we're not so good at. And for some people, that can really be a punch in the gut. You know what I'm saying? Like, especially when somebody highlights that area of weakness that you're in. Sometimes people try to help you improve in an area that you may struggle with. You know what I mean? And sometimes the help that they give you can almost seem like an indictment on your inability to be good at it. So let's take this class. All right, so you've always been good in school. Does that mean that you were always good at everything else? Hell no. You know how it go? You might have been the man when it came to reading, writing, arithmetic, science, and all that. But when them school dances came around, you might have had to stay your ass off of that dance floor. Yeah, you might not have been blessed with the good feet. You know what I'm saying? You might, and you know what I mean. And I'm only talking about that because there is always some area that we are really good at that some people know that we're good at, and some people don't even know that we're good at. Do you have a skill that you practice at privately and you know that you're good at? Have you ever done this? Have you ever practiced something at home by yourself and really, really practiced at it, waiting for that day for you to get your chance to shine on that stage? Something like dancing. You might be watching all the videos. You know, we talking about back in the day. We ain't talking about all that TikTok, all that TikTok, you know, social media stuff right now, you know, with all them challenges. I'm talking about when dancing was real dancing. You know, I'm talking about like in the 70s, 80s or whatever, when dancers had names, real names, you know what I mean? And, you know, you knew who the people were in your school, around the way or whatever, who could really dance. And they were always popular because they knew all the new dances. And people would just watch them go like, wow, man, you know, they'd be kicking it. We used to have this show in Philadelphia called Dancing on Air back in the 80s. In the early 80s, there was a show called Dancing on Air. And it was a local TV show where high school students from the Philadelphia area, Jersey area, and Philadelphia suburbs, they would, I'm not sure how it worked because I never was on the show or whatever, but somehow you got on the show. I'm a little sketchy about exactly where the show was located, but you would see people that you knew on the show. And they on there, they kicking it, dancing on air. Like, it was our local Soul Train, American Bandstand, but it was literally called Dancing on Air. And they had, like, you know, early in the rap game, they had, you know, rap groups that would come there and perform, like the Sugar Hill Gang, like the Treacherous Three, like, you know, groups like that. It was dope. It was a dope little show, and it was local, and it was hot. So, but you would see people on there dancing. So you might have, like back in the day, you might have been at home watching the kids on Dancing on Air, like, yo, they can do it, I can do it. So you might have been practicing your steps or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to get it. And you might have actually really been good at it. Nobody knows that you're home practicing except for you, your mom, your mom, your dad, your brothers, sisters, whatever, you know. Like, nobody really knew. You know, you go to school one day like, yo, I'm prepared for this dance that's coming up. It's the freshman dance. Or it's the eighth grade prom. Whatever the case may be, it was being able to dance back in the day was a big thing. It was a big thing. And the time was going to come when you was going to have to dance in front of somebody or do some dancing. Somebody was going to ask you to dance at a party. You know, it used to be a such thing as basement parties, you know, house parties. Used to be a such thing. Anyway, you might have got your chance to do it and went there and killed shit. Like, I didn't know you could dance. Like, well, you know, I be, you know what I'm saying? You got your little, everybody patting you in the back. You know, they ready to let you crowd surf and shit. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, you might not have been able to do it. You might have watched you Dancing on Air, American Bandstand, Soul Train, the Solid Gold, New York Hot Tracks. What was the other show? It was a bunch, you know, back in the day, it was a bunch of shows. What was that? A Dance Fever, all that bullshit. You might have watched those shows and was wondering why you can't do it. You can figure out why E equals MC squared, but you just could not get those dance steps together. So somebody might have tried to help you out. Your cousin might have been a good dancer. So they trying to help you out. Like, no, what you doing wrong? You ain't got no rhythm. You just you got to dance to the beat. What's the beat? The beat. Practice that first instead of just but I'm just saying this to say that the first time you flunk a class is like the first time that you had to submit to the fact that you might not be good at something that you really wanted to be good at, or when you think that you're good at something that you're really not that good at. And, you know, that's when the excuses start to kick in. You know. Sort of like back in the day when you thought that you was the fastest runner in the class and you wasn't. Didn't mean that you weren't fast, but you weren't the fastest. You know, there was there might have been somebody faster than you. Now, that would have been me. Like, in my mind, I really thought I was a fast runner. But in all reality, when I really think about it, I ain't never win no races when it came to running. I was only kind of fast. I wasn't fast. And I'll never forget when I had to face the reality that I wasn't that fast. Because I could beat people in running, but I was never the fastest. And I remember I tried out for track when I was in the ninth grade. And I don't know why, because I ain't like that shit. I don't like to run I don't. To this day, I'd rather walk, like power walk, than run. Like, running ain't fun. Not for me. For some people love running. And, you know, jogging and all of that shit, I'll do it, but I won't keep doing it because I'm like, this shit whack. But you know, it's good exercise and all that shit. But anyway, I tried out for track in the ninth grade. And I'm never forget my man, Lewis Greggs. He lived in 13th, the projects at 13th. He's still my friend on Facebook. This is my man. You know what I mean? He lived in the projects. There used to be these high-rise projects at 13th and Catherine. All my Philly peeps know what I'm talking about. They're no longer there. They tore them down years and years ago. But he lived up in those projects. And Lewis was a little taller than me, dark-skinned cat. Very unassuming. He tried out for the track team too. And so I had to race him. And I remember he smoked the shit out of me. And I was like, in my mind, he still didn't beat me. I was like, I couldn't accept that this dude was faster than me. But I also couldn't accept the fact that I wasn't fast. I wasn't that fast. Now, I really didn't put my all into it because I really didn't think I would have to in order to beat him. But I realized there's no way I'm going to put my all into this shit ever because I don't want to do it. Like, so I'm either going to have to be faster than everybody else by default or it ain't going to happen. Now, if I would have trained at it, I would have got faster. I would have got better because my legs would have got stronger because, you know, that's what it takes to be an athlete. But I wasn't doing that shit. So, you know what the funniest thing? To this day, there's another girl from high school who insists that I was a track star. I don't remember making the team. I know I didn't go. I didn't go to no practices. I never got a uniform. I never did a meet ever. And to this day, she'd be like, yeah, track star, Omar, track star. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, Tonya, I didn't, you know, I'm going to let her have that. She'd be like, nah, you used to, I'm like, what? Was there another Omar? The only other Omar I knew that went to the school when we was going there, he was in like the dance magnet, the theater magnet. He was a gay boy. And that shit used to piss me off too because people, you know, people be talking about the gay Omar and mixing it up with the straight Omar. You know, the fly Omar, the dope Omar. You know, the fila, you know, sheepskin and bomber Omar. Me. Not him. Not the dancing. I ain't had nothing against the other Omar. We ain't even look like though. But see, back in 85, 86, 87, it wasn't like now. Like now, the gay Omar would have been the most popular Omar. He wouldn't have no problem. Back then, it was like, oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, I remember my man asked, he met some girl who went to my school. And he was like, yo, you know my boy Omar? And she was like, oh, yeah, he gay. And he was like, nah, you got the wrong O. She was like, yes, because blah, blah. And he told me about that. I was like, what? I was like, it's another Omar there. He is gay. Like, yo, did you describe me to him? Because we all look the Omar with the hair, you know, the box. Anyway. Anyway. But Omar was a very good dancer. Omar was a very good dancer. I don't know if that Omar could do the Fela, the Pee Wee Herman, all that shit. But, you know what I mean? He throwing them leotards to do all that other shit. What up, T. Carrie Wright? What up, Mia? What up, Stacey White? Cal Chamberlain? What up, y'all? So, yeah. So, there's always something that you think you might be good at that you might not be that good at. You know what I'm saying? And it can be a shock to your system when you have to submit to that fact or you have to actually try and improve on it. And it can be very demoralizing when you try to get better at something that you're not that good at, that you may have thought that you was good at, that you have to keep trying in order to get better at. Yeah. Sort of like me in video games. Like, I'm alright, but compared to them dudes I be playing against online. So the first time you flunked a class. Yeah, for some people, that can be like a turning point in their lives. That's how they feel it. I'm feeling like this is a turning point in my life. Like, I mean, this shit ain't never going to be right, you know, if I stay on this path. Like, I'm doomed. Like, I used to be able, you know, some people, you may know people who used to skip school, you know, play hooky, cut, even drank, got high and all that kind of stuff. They ain't been to school 2-3 weeks. They come home and, I mean, they go back to school and still ace all they tests. Exams. Come to midterms and ace the whole midterms. Go to finals and ace the whole finals. Like, how did you end up on the honor roll and you barely came to school? Some people had it like that. Some people were just like that. But because of time when you have to pay the piper. Because that might have worked in high school. It might not work when you go to college. The college is actually designed so that ain't going to work. Like, okay. Unless your memory is all of that, you ain't going to be able to do this. Even if your memory is all of that, because you got to come to class in order to memorize the material that's going to be on the exam. That was the hard thing about college to me, knowing exactly what was going to be on the exam, because, you know, you used to have these big ass textbooks that you had to read and all that kind of stuff. So how it wasn't always easy to know exactly what was going to be on the exam. So there could be times when you studied all of this other stuff. And that none of that shit was on the exam. That's why it was better to have classes where they had quizzes leading up to the exam. So you could get some credit, plus you could follow the material that was important to be able to pass the exam and to actually know what you're talking about. You know, you're supposed to actually learn something. Anyway, not just pass the test, because some people think it's all about just passing exams, doing well on the papers, and, you know, whatever. Right? Like, no, you're actually supposed to learn something. You know? So anyway, for some people, that can be, you know, it could be a real shock to their system. Where are my glasses at? All right, I'll use these. Okay. Mia says, our confidence. Okay. Overconfidence and not remaining humble will have you thinking you are unstoppable until something happens that humbles you quickly. Yeah. Like when you think you could fight and then you fight against somebody who can fight. Yeah, you might have been lumping up everybody before you because they ain't have hands. Now you done got into a fight with somebody that can bob and weave and duck, have you all tired, swinging and missing, and they just rope-a-doping you to wax that ass. And losing a fight is one thing, because you can always lose a fight. Everybody loses a fight at some point. But looking horrible and humiliated in a fight is another thing. You know, and a person that can really fight knows how to make a person that can't fight look dumb to the point where you almost scared to fight. Like you want to, like they might not have even hit you yet, but they might do something to you that make you look so stupid. Like you might come in hard trying to throw a haymaker and they wait until the last second and just dip that shit. And you threw it so hard, you damn near fell on the floor like, oh shit. I really needed to have connected with that punch. Because not only am I unbalanced, I'd have knocked all these boxes over, broke this glass, and I'd have hurt my shoulder. I'd have hurt my shoulder falling. Like, now I'm not even in good shape to fight. You know, or that shit, you know, motherfuckers would do back in the day, pull the shirt over your head. Pull the shirt over your head and just swing your ass around. You cannot punch with a shirt over your head. Your arms are totally immobilized and useless and whatever. So, you know. Yeah. You may have never fought with any. You may have never fought anybody who did anything like that. Yeah. Back in the day, fist fighting used to be an art. So motherfuckers would trip you while they fought you, step on your feet, step on your foot, and just bow, jab you up. People used to just talk about different ways to fight people and beat them up and whatever. So yeah, so you might have really thought that you could fight before because you were fighting against lower competition. And then you fight somebody that really can fight, and even before they even threw punches at you or really set you up, they kind of let you know that your shit, that this ain't going to be a good day for you, dog. It's not going to be a good day. Oh, Carol Chamberlain says, my cousin was on that show. I remember that now. I remember that show. Yeah, Dancing on Air was very popular. Dancing on Air. Black kids and white kids. I'll never forget. That's back then, I thought mostly white kids went to Overbrook. They used to be like, yeah, I go to Overbrook High. I'm like, yeah, all right. I don't know what they did with Overbrook or at Overbrook from like 81 to 87. But there wasn't no white people in there in 87. It was over. Got them up out of there. Yeah, I go to Overbrook High. I go to Washington High. I go to Lincoln. But those were the whites. Oh, but anyway. Carol Chamberlain says, I flunked biology because I couldn't dissect a frog. You're a little grossed out by cutting over cold amphibious bodies. Is that the problem, Carol? You don't like to play with dead things? So you was thinking like, how is this part of science? Like it's called biology. Yeah, but why we gotta cut off? I don't want to cut this frog down the middle. Kel said I sure was. Couldn't do it. Like, no. I'm not cutting open no frog. Kermit is safe with me. Mia says, me too, Carol. I wouldn't cut the frog or pig. I ended up taking the book exam. Look, I don't know. I mean, I thought I was really great at science. So I got to college and I was like, yo, I really suck at this. See, I ain't like y'all. I thought I was good at a whole lot of things that I wasn't that good at. You know, I mean, I've had to bite the bullet on a whole lot of shit. I'd have ate more humble pie. It might not seem like it, but yeah, I had. I'm like, man, I'll be pissed. TK, right, said, I cut all of them. Yeah, it's already dead. They ain't going to do nothing. They ain't going to do nothing. I ain't gonna hurt nobody. I just didn't like the way the frogs. What do they do? Pickle them joints? I was like, how come there ain't no blood in this frog? What happened to the frog? Cat anatomy? They had you cutting open. I was like, a cat? We gotta cut open a cat? That was actually my man in Northeast. They had cat anatomy. We ain't had no cat. Carol says, okay, but I love biology until it came to dissecting animals. Yeah, like you might have understood biology in terms of the organs and how, and you know, the makeup of the body, whether it's human or animal. You might have understood how the organs work in conjunction with each other. But I don't see why we can't just understand how it works without having to touch nothing. Nobody said, just because I'm good at biology, didn't say that doesn't mean that I want to be a surgeon. Formaldehyde. Oh, is that how they got them? Okay. That's how they preserve them? Okay. Carol says, crazy, but okay. No, TK Wright says, exactly. I was like, where are you keeping these things preserved? Carol says, formaldehyde. Okay. TK Wright says, I failed a math class for beefing with a teacher when I was a junior. Really? So how did you feel the first time you failed a class? Like, was it a big deal? Or was you so mad at the teacher that you saw it coming? So it was like, man, I'm really smarter than the teacher too. Like for some people, failing a class can be like the end of an era. It can feel like the end of the world. Like, yo, I ain't never failed a class, especially if you waited all the way till college to fail a class. And you can look at it a couple of different ways. When you don't fail a class till you get in college, you might look at it like, well, the stakes are different now because I'm out of high school. So it ain't like, you know, it's not like I have the potential to flunk a grade. And, or you might look at it like, well, I have other things going on while I'm in college anyway that I'm going to do. Like you might have a job on the side that's already ready to hire you, whether you graduate college or not. So you getting a degree might just be the icing on the cake, but that can also be why you feel like it's your downfall. Cause you might feel like that's messing up your opportunity. Like, you know, you might work for a company that is going to really fast track you to success if you get your business degree. So it might be very important for you to get your business degree, but you might fuck around and fail QBA, which is quantitative business analysis. And the only reason I remember QBA is because I used to hear all of those business majors bitch about that class. Accounting and QBA. QBA was like the kryptonite to the supermen of the business school. Like, yeah, I gotta take this QBA course. This shit is, I don't know what it entailed, but I know that I used to hear a bunch of complaints about it. But if you couldn't get through QBA, you wasn't going to do good in business at all. There was no way you were going to graduate if you couldn't do good in QBA. You had to get a decent grade in it, not just take it. Wow. TK Wright says, I cried real tears in private in the girls' bathroom. I could dig it. But it didn't mean that you was dumb. Life can be so unfair. So unfair. I really just like to see my hand doing that. Especially since I've been having wrist problems lately. Okay. All right. Here we go. Mia says, I was so much of a nerd. Anything under a B was devastating to me. I was so depressed and disappointed in myself. Well, look at this. Carol says, I was really let down flunking biology because I liked that class. TK Wright says, I was furious. I had to retake the class in summer school. What? You went to summer school? Wow. So, yeah. Well, let me ask y'all this. With flunking a class being so devastating to y'all, did getting through that make not doing well at other things any easier? Or did it make you feel like, I will never fail at anything again? I'm going to work three times as hard next time. I'm going to always get it right. Because doing well in school can be like an indictment on your sense of perfection. And you may realize that nobody, in theory, you may realize that nobody is perfect or nothing is perfect. But in practice, you may feel like, yeah, but everything I do has an air of perfection to it. So I understand that you might not be perfect. Your projects may not be perfect. Your work may not be perfect, but mine is. You might feel that way. I never had this. The problems that y'all talking about, I never really had them. Like, I always thought I was smart, but I never thought I was school smart. Like, kind of yeah and kind of no. I felt like the weather had to be right. The atmospheric pressure had to be right in order for me to do well. But what I didn't really know is that in order for me to do well in school or anything in life, my head had to be right. Simple as that. When my head wasn't right, to this day, when my head is not really in something, or if I have a lot of things going on, it takes away my ability to do some things well, even things that I might be really, really good at. So when you're younger, you might not understand that as well. I know I didn't. You know, I really didn't. Carol says, I pushed harder to never fail again at anything, and I'm still disappointed if I feel I fail at anything. Wow. Jeez. Guys, Mia says, I feel like whatever I do has to be right. I beat myself up. Huh. Jeez. Stacy White, what's going on? Going on, Stacey Stace? Yeah. All right. So beat yourself up when you don't do well at something. Interesting. You know how we say that we're our own worst critic, and some people really are. Yeah, I guess. We all beat ourselves up to a certain degree. P- personally, I think personally, I've gotten so used to making mistakes. I really only beat myself up when basically when I don't pay attention. That's when I mess up, when I don't really pay attention, when I don't pay attention to the details or whatever, because there's always something small that normally trips me up. Mia says, I'm definitely my worst critic. Carol says, that would be me, Omar, my own worst enemy. Well, how do y'all get that? Now, we're talking about flunking a class or not doing well at something that you're used to doing well or know that you can do well at. You know how some people are good at people. Some people are so good at making friends and forming relationships and having and gaining popularity that they're not used to ever having situations where people don't like them or where they have to build a relationship or where they have to figure out how to gain entrance into somebody's head or heart. And I'm saying all that to say this. Sometimes people mess up with people. And you know how messing up in math, messing up in English, science, history, anything is something that you can easily fix by studying better, asking questions, and things like that. But when it comes to people, you can turn a person off and never have a chance to ever get it right with them again. You can turn a person off or make them so angry that they never want to deal with you again. And that's why I named the show The First Time You Flunked a Class, The First Time That You Messed Up with Someone. We have probably all been in a situation where we messed up with somebody, made a mistake with somebody, and it might have been by mistake. And somebody thought that we did it on purpose. You may have hit somebody playing around, thought that you did it on purpose. You may have teased somebody or said something about somebody playing around, and they thought that you really meant what you said. You may have had a chance to fix that. You may not have gotten another chance to fix that, depending on how sensitive the person was. Now, this is different than what I'm talking about when somebody, you know, how we was talking about the other day when somebody thought that you stole something or took something from them that you didn't steal or take. This is different. This is when you actually did mess up with them, but you didn't mean to mess up with them, or you didn't mean it to that degree. You didn't think it would go that far. You know, like rapping Duke, da-ha, nobody thought the hip-hop would take it this far. So messing up with a person might put you in the mind state where you start to question your own judgment about how you deal with people. Now you're gun shy about how you deal with people. So you might do certain things to try to compensate for your mistake. Like maybe giving too much of yourself to people who don't care about you or would ever give anything to you. You know, putting yourself in harm's way for people who would never put themselves in harm's way for you. Showing favor to those who would never show favor to you. That kind of thing. Meek says, facts. When someone does something that turns me off or makes me give the side eye, I'm usually not giving a second chance, or I'm going to be very short with them. Mm-hmm. And he says, wait a minute. And now I'm in the limelight because I'm round right. Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade. Yeah, right? Yeah. You know, I wouldn't have been able to do those next lyrics. I wouldn't have. Like, people think that I'm a really fast thinker, and that couldn't be farther from the truth. Like, I'd be like, yo, oh, hurry up. I'd be like, oh, chill, chill. Yo, oh, hurry up. Okay. You said you messed that up? See, if you wouldn't have said that, nah, you know, that was wrong.
Now I'm in the limelight.
Oh, because you spell, but I know what you mean. I'm in the limelight because of rhyme right. Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade. Okay. But yeah. So you might have messed up with somebody. Not meaning to mess up with them. And because that person didn't receive what you were trying to do, they didn't receive it well, or they didn't receive it with open arms, it could have you questioning how you deal with other people. It's like when somebody breaks up with you and you didn't want to break up with them. And I don't care what nobody say. It's hard losing friends that you don't want to lose. And that's why so many people do so much fronting out here. You know, like I don't give a fuck. You know what I'm saying? You know, I'll block a motherfucker in a minute. As far as I'm concerned, all of that, you know, exiting people out of your life quick is all to protect your own feelings. Because you know what it's like to feel hurt, betrayed, you know, get your feelings hurt. Nobody likes to get their feelings hurt. And the worst thing about having your feelings hurt is people knowing that your feelings were hurt. So you think that if somebody knows that your feelings get hurt by a particular thing, then anytime they want to control you, then they'll just dial up that thing that hurts your feelings. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Oh, you don't want to give me a ride to the laundromat? Oh, you ain't going to loan me $50 to my next pay? Oh, you ain't going to babysit my kids while I go to the club? Carol says, I'm going to protect me at all costs. I mean, it's an understandable thing to do. But like I said, what about when you mess up with a person? When you mess up with a person. Like, let's say. Let's say. You promised somebody that you could do something for them that they wanted done. Now, they were going to go get it done professionally. They were going to get it done professionally. And you said, no, you ain't got to pay them. I'll do it for you almost for free or, you know, for a big discount. You know what I mean? It'll be great. Like, let's say catering an event. Catering event. They were going to spend $20,000 catering this event. You said, no, me, my grandmother, my sister, and my mom, we can cater. We'll do this for you. We'll do this for you. You know, you ain't got to spend no $20,000. All you have to do is give us the money for the supplies and maybe a couple of $100 and we'll be straight. Because, you know, We fam. I got you. You said, all right. You sure? Like, yeah, we got you. All right. Gave them the hometown discount. Now, you may have asked them for the money for the supplies, the food, all the trimmings and all that kind of stuff. So that stuff might have came up to 5,000. That might have came up to 5,000. Now you're starting to see how come some of this catering stuff costs a lot. Even though they might be making a really good profit, but now you're starting to see. Now, all of these supplies came up to, like, let's say between 5,000 and 7,000. You only asked for 4,000. You see what's happening here? They ain't got enough. Now you got to go back to them like, listen, I need some more money for these supplies. You might, depending on how that person rolls, because, you know, it's so, when you're talking about a graduation party or a wedding and all of that, that shit is so stressful. Dealing with caterers, dealing with party planners, dealing with contractors, dealing with contracts, all that stuff. It's stressful. It's expensive and it's stressful. All right. So now you got to go back to them and ask for some more money. So now you look. Now you think that they're looking at you sideways, and guess what? They might be. Because you thinking that they're thinking, see, I should have just ordered this. I knew they couldn't do it. I should have just went to this caterer and it would have been a done deal. Whatever the price was, they was going to have to handle that the way they handled it. But okay, so you went back to them. Hopefully you went back to them. Hopefully you didn't try to make do with the 4,000. Because here's what's going to happen. Here's what I'm getting to. The event comes up. You ain't have enough food for everybody. There wasn't enough food. Or somebody ain't show up that was on your team. Your grandma got sick. Your sister was too busy getting high, fucking around with this dude she been, you know, messing around with, this new guy. Your mom been being your mom. You know what I'm talking about. Your mom been your mom. Your mom been doing mom things. Everybody mom ain't that mom. You know what I'm talking about. You know what we're not doing that. We ain't doing that. Your mom been acting like your mom. So you out here on the island, grandma sick. I'm hoping that Big Mama can, you know, that she'll get better in time, you know, to come help us when it's time to finally. You fucked up the event. Now, sure, they didn't have to spend as much money, but guess what? The package that you delivered wasn't as good. And people could see it. They could see it. You might have messed up the chicken or the beef or the fish. They told you, you put tilapia instead of the whiting. Like, everybody eating this shit. I thought we was having salmon. I would have ordered the chicken. Will that friendship be able to be repaired? You know what I'm saying? Because everything else about the wedding might have went well, but you fucked up this reception. You did. You fucked it up. You should have went back and asked for that 7,000, but you tried to get it done with the 4. You should have went back and got. I mean, they still saving. They still saving. You know the. They still saving 13,000 messing with you.
hold on, man. It says, side note, I do clubs even exist anymore? Where do adults go to? I really don't know. Since the pandemic, I don't know. I know they got something got to be open. Nightlife has not died. They going somewhere. But you're right. I don't hear nobody in this city talking about no club. What club? I don't listen to the radio. But if I listen to the radio, would I hear songs about clubs? I don't know. Do they be simulcasting from clubs anymore? I don't know. Carol says, Mia, I am too out of the loop, but I don't miss it. It's not the same, I'm sure. Mia says, oh, Carol, I'm sure. Crazy as this world is, just wondering what adults do for fun anymore. They smoke a lot of weed and eat crab legs. I don't know. Mia says, laugh my ass off. Your mom being your mom. You know what I'm talking about. Listen, come on, man. You know what I'm talking about. Come on, man. You know how it is when your mom be on some other shit. I ain't saying she ain't a good mom, because she is. But you know, now your mom be on some other shit. For the moms that's for the people who moms be on some other shit, you know what I'm talking about. I ain't gonna talk. I'm not gonna say what other shit she on. She on her shit though. You know what I mean? Your mom was being a mom at the wrong time. She wasn't being a mom at the wrong time. She was being her mom. She was being. Wait, but hold up. Check this out. She wasn't being a mom at the wrong time. She was being a mom at. Okay, no, I'm gonna fix it. She wasn't being a mom at the wrong time. She was being your mom at the wrong time, Yeah. Mia said, I understand and I felt that. Some things are just better done by professionals than spending the extra money. Sometimes. See, if it goes right, there's no problem. But soon as, you know, somebody get a piece of undercooked food, like, listen, you ain't supposed to have to apologize for nothing. This event need to go down right. It ain't supposed to look like you got Mr. Charlie, you know, Jack, like, you know what I'm saying, Jack of all trades, Mr. Charlie to do the event. Like, yo. Now, it's true that weddings cost too much money. But anyway, so you messed up with this person. Are they going, will y'all still be cool? Because y'all might not be. Because they have to apologize. They got to answer to somebody. Even though, like, the parents might have been paying for the wedding, you know, they don't want their daughter or their son, whoever, you know, to feel like, yo, y'all just gave me this cheesy-ass wedding. We should have just went to the Justice of the Peace and then came back and just had like a little get-together, a little celebration. You know what I mean? I should have did, if I'd have known y'all was going to fuck this up, I would have did a destination wedding. You know what I mean? Shout out to Miss Doretha. Miss Doretha, may she rest in peace. That was my cousin. That was my older cousin. He passed last year, as a matter of fact. Rest in peace, for real. But in 1993, she catered my sister's wedding, and it was crazy as shit. It would have went really, really well, because, you know, Miss Doretha was always used to cooking. You know, she used to run the speakeasy down North Philly. You know, shout out to Fourth and Huntington. That's where they live. But that, if y'all remember that big ass snowstorm in March of 1993, that was the day, that Saturday was the day my sister got married. Yeah. That blizzard, that big ass deep blizzard. We couldn't postpone it. We rented out the banquet hall. It had to go down that day. So the people who ran the banquet hall, they had to bring their ass in there. We in suits. We had to put our boots on with the suits. The snow was like this high. We ain't had no business being outside at all. This wedding had to go on. Mr. Risa came through with the serving trays and all of that. We had that wedding that day. I still got pictures of that shit. You know what I'm saying? You know? It was what it was. Niggas going into the banquet hall. We did it at Pulaski Hall. Was it Pulaski Hall?
over there on Germantown, on Old York Road between Rising Sun and there. I think it was Pulaski Hall. I believe so. Anyway, yeah. Who knows how good it could have been? You know, we trusted her, and she was a lifelong friend for us, so we knew she wasn't going to fumble it, and she didn't. But I mean, that shit was crazy. You know, 2 feet of snow, at least 2 feet of snow. It was a blizzard, that big ass blizzard of. I remember I couldn't go back to school. I came home on break. She got married during my spring break. It was my last year in college. And I couldn't go back. You know, schools don't be shutting down. That's how bad it was. And, you know, a lot of people didn't make it to that wedding. But we did. We did. All the family, the close family did, and really close friends who was determined, because that was an easy way. That was an easy excuse. Like, I ain't coming out there in that shit. Oh man, Mia says DJs just do the Friday Saturday party from the studio, and you party from your house. I know, right? Speaking of DJs, glad you brought that up. Since we talking about weddings, we talking about party planning, we talking about events. Yeah, the wrong DJ. I told you to hire the DJ. Where's the DJ? All right, the DJ is supposed to be on his way. The DJ is supposed to be set up when people are coming through. They're supposed to hear music playing. We ain't supposed to be waiting on no DJ. We ain't supposed to be waiting on no DJ. Okay, Pulaski Hall is on Hunting Park. Okay, that is Pulaski Hall. You're right, and it's still there. This hall that I'm talking about is over. You probably know what I'm talking about. It's still there. I don't know if it's open, but on Old York Road between Rising Sun and that other street. So yeah, things like a DJ, catering, and whatever. Music, and food. You got it. That shit gotta be right. Gotta be right. Music and food is like the potato salad and the deviled eggs of the whole event. All right. Mia says 33 inches of snow stuck in your house for a week. Oh, you remember that? That shit was crazy. And she says, wow, how did y'all have a wedding in that blizzard? It wasn't no other choice. I had to go back to school. So she had to have it that day. I remember, you know, we get my mom, my stepdad, my dad was on point. They was like, all right, no, we got to fucking do this shit. Stepping in the snow. You know what I mean? From we had to take off the good shoes, the hard bottoms. We had to take off the hard bottoms and put them galoshes on. You know what I'm saying? But we had to get the food in there. We had to get set up. Then we had to brush ourselves off. You know what I mean? Dry ourselves off or whatever. But they got married. And it's funny, man, because to this day, that blizzard, getting married in that blizzard was symbolic of their marriage. 5 years of snowfall. I think she would agree with that. 5 years of snowfall. Carol says, I had just started a new job and couldn't get there. Oh, you remember? That blizzard was crazy. I mean, we've had plenty of blizzards, but that blizzard shut down schools, universities. Like, I went to Penn State. They used to plenty of snow up there. Plenty of cold up there. They was like, nah, we good. Y'all stay your asses home. You know what I mean? Ain't no buses going to make it back up here. Y'all mess around and Greyhound fall off the side of Mount Nittany. Because when you go to Penn State, you go up this mountain. You literally travel up this mountain. You know what I mean? It's a highway, but it's literally going up in the mountain because this shit is at the top of the mountain. Yet they call it Happy Valley. I'm like, how is it up top and down low? I don't know. Carol says they weren't used to that much snow. Mm-hmm. What is it? A blizzard? I can't get married in 13, 14, 18 inches of snow. 24, 36, whatever. It was definitely at least two feet of snow. And it started that day, like the night before. We was like, huh? Huh? Yeah. But Miss Doretha came through with them serving trays or whatever. She made it happen. Like, eh, we gotta go. But yeah, like in a situation where you have single-handedly messed up somebody's event, you know, you might not feel like you could come back from that. Like, yeah, I goofed. I shouldn't have tried to do it with that money. And you know, it's not just that. It'd be contracting. You were supposed to fix somebody's roof. You messed up the roof. You didn't have the right materials for the roof. The roof is still leaking. And now you acting like you don't want to go back up there. You need more money. You messed up with that person. Forget about the fact that they're not going to hire you to do nothing else. You also messed up the friendship and the relationship that you had with that person. What are you going to do? What? And you may have never done that before. Your relationships and friendships with people may have been flawless before. Now they ain't got nothing but flaws. Ain't nothing but cloudy diamonds on that shit. That ain't no diamond. Those cubic zirconia, sapphire where it's shit out of here, son. Yo, cubic zirconia, rhinestone, cowboy ass nigga. Remember that fake gold called Monet? I'm a Monet cowboy. With the green shit around your neck, I'm a Monet cowboy. All right, man. Actually, Monet was the good. That was the good fake gold. We about to get out of here, y'all. But I want to holler at y'all about this situation, man. How do you deal with the first time you flunked a class? You know, the first time you didn't do well at something. The first time that you messed up with somebody. You know what I mean? People are afraid to get married again. Afraid to start over again. Or definitely want to get married again, even if it's not a good situation, because they felt like they messed up. Like, what if you had previously been faithful in all your relationships and you cheat on somebody? And it happens. You might have had a moment of weakness. You know, maybe you were going through something or whatever. But bottom line is you cheated. They didn't cheat. You cheated. You. Yeah, you. And it's like, not only did you cheat, but you got caught. Couples go through this all the time. And some of them really get through it. But it can be a trust issue that can linger with y'all for a long time. See, it's one thing. It's one thing when you are the one having to do the forgiving. It's another thing when you have to be the one to be forgiven. The whole trajectory, it changes the whole trajectory of how your responses go and how you deal with things. You're not used to being the one that has to make the apology, the one that has to make it right, the one that has to walk the straight and narrow, the one that has to prove themselves again. It's not, you're not used to that. Some people can't deal with it so badly that they just scrap the whole thing. Like, I can't come back from this. I'm too ashamed. Too ashamed. It's a shame. The way you're doing this. Cal said, LOL. And people thought they were wearing real gold. Monet! Monet! I like real gold, patent seal gold. Like, not like some gold, which is slum gold. That was one nice and smooth first album. All right, we're going to do these birthdays. Shout out. We. Make sure y'all hit the like button, though, before we go. Make sure that y'all share the show. Make sure that y'all subscribe to the channel if you haven't subscribed to the channel yet. All right, we have some birthday shout outs to do. Some people were born on this glorious, glorious, glorious April 23rd, and they deserve to be acknowledged. So let's go about our business of acknowledging them and making them feel special because they are special, because they are special, because they are S-E-E-C-I-A-L. They get the R-E-S-P-E-C-T. They are S-E-E-C-I-A-L. They get the R-E-S-P-E-C-T. They are S-E-E-C-I-A-L. They get the R-E-S-P-E-C-T. They get number one out the box. I'm doing this shit like I'm looking at it. And I'm not having some problems with this browsing. I don't know. All right, but hold on. Hold on, y'all. Chill, man. Chill. Got y'all, man. I got y'all. I said number one out the box. We got good birthdays today. My girl Evangeline Ames, affectionately known by people who love her as Vangie. Vangie Ames, happy birthday to you from New York, the VA. And also Mabel Lopez. Mabel Lopez turning 35 years old today. And Aaliyah War, happy birthday to you. And Diane Chamberlain Williams Brantley, happy birthday to you. And Shangles Jules turning 52 years old today. And, well, Shangles Jules is actually Michelle Jules, so happy birthday to you. And Jessica Bowman turning 34 years old today. That's my little sis. That's my little sis right there, Jessica Bowman. Happy birthday to you. And Monique Wells. I'll tell you something. Seventh and eighth grade, Monique had me open. I thought Monique was... that damn Monique. She used to be playing the shit out of me. She ruined me. But happy birthday to you, Mo. And also Angelique Brooks. Last but not least, my girl Angelique Brooks. Happy birthday to you. I want to say happy birthday to all of y'all and anyone else out there who shares this birthday on this glorious, glorious, glorious April 23rd, anywhere out there in the world, worldwide, internationally, and universally. All of y'all go ahead and turn up, turn up. But don't turn up too loud. Just turn up loud enough so everybody can hear you. I hope that the day finds you all in good health, happiness, mind, body, soul, and spirit. You rock out, rock on, and do the damn, the damn, the rock out, rock on, and do the damn, rock out, rock on, and do the damn thing. You do your thing, y'all. Represent the queens and kings. You do your thing, y'all. Represent the queens and kings. Good things happen to those who wait. Great things happen to those who grind. And anything can happen to those who go for theirs. So go hard, go for yours, and remember, man, listen, you're going to mess up with somebody. You're going to flunk a class. You're going to do something that makes you feel like an ass. But you can always come back. You can always do better. But you got to give somebody else a chance. That's right. You got to give them a chance even when you are the one who messed up. You got to give them a chance to let you see you yourself come up. You got to do the things you got to do to make the situation better. But what if they won't let you? Well, we all got to wait. Like my man, at my last job, he said, man, he was like, whenever he would goof at something, he'd be like, players mess up too, man. Players mess up, right? He was like, I can't get a player pass. I said, you know what? You're right. And he was right about that. You know what I mean? Just because if I know personally, if I know that you did something trying to bust a move, but you ain't do it with any malicious intent, you know, I ain't going to hold that against you. But, of course, it depends on exactly what it is. As long as it ain't no life-changing, life-altering type shit. Peace to all my day ones, my everydays, and my brand news. I love y'all to death. Resuscitate y'all. Love y'all right back to life. We will be back tomorrow night, like Emily said, at 7 p.m. It's not the end of the world when you make a mistake. It's not the end of the world even when you do something on purpose. It's not the end of the world. You got to keep going. Only people who can't keep going in life is the people who don't have any lives anymore. And rest in peace to all of them. While you still here, you got to keep trying. You got to keep pushing, baby. All right. So.